Well, if you are visiting here this morning, I am the irregular preacher. The regular one is gone for at least a while. But I'm glad to be able to be with you today. And this is a trial sermon, at least that's what I was told. When I was invited to come back, the brother said, "We want to see if you could preach." I must say that I don't normally preach. I teach, but oftentimes the circumstances of my teaching and my preaching is far different from this. It may involve a small group of people that meet in a sometimes unelectrified building with no air conditioning and often, obviously, no fans. And at night, they don't meet because there's no light. And I'm here because I'm soliciting funds for work in, particularly in Africa and in Asia. And I want to encourage you to think about those brethren who meet in places that this would be palatial to them. If I were to say Caesarea Philippi, what would you think? Here's what I would think. This is the place where Jesus said to his disciples, "Who do men say that I am?" And there are various answers which are given by these men. Well, some say you're Jeremiah, one of the prophets, maybe even John the Baptist. "Who do you say that I am?" And it's on this occasion that Peter says, "You are the Christ, the Son of the living God." And Jesus commends that answer. He tells Peter, "You're blessed. Flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father who is in heaven. I will give to you the keys of the kingdom." But the next subject that Jesus approaches has nothing to do with the blessedness of Peter. It has to do with what lies in the not-too-distant future, which involves his death. Matthew chapter 16, verse 21. "From that time, Jesus began to show his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things from the elders and chief priests and scribes and be killed and be raised up on the third day." That's unbelievable. If Jesus is the Christ, if he is the Son of God, how can he die? I suspect that must have been a thought that ran through the minds of these men. They did not understand. And that is why Peter says, "This will never happen to you." "It's impossible," he says. "God forbid it, Lord. This shall never happen to you." And I'm sure that Peter believed that surely he must be mistaken. Jesus must be wrong here. "Get behind me, Satan. You're not minding the things of God, but the things of man." And so this is an occasion that is both uplifting and depressing. It is uplifting in that Peter says, "I know who you are. I've watched you. I've heard you. I've seen things you have done. I've heard things you have said. You must be the Christ, the Son of the living God." "Yes, that is correct. But I'm going to die." "No, that cannot be." It's interesting to see that Jesus leaves out some, what I think is critical information about his coming death. He does say, "We're going to go to Jerusalem. I'll be delivered into the hands of the rulers of the people. I'm going to suffer." And then he says, "I'm going to die." They completely overlook the fact that he said, "But on the third day I will rise again." You can almost understand why they are so shocked to hear the fact that he is going to die. They completely miss the statement that he says, "I'm going to rise." It will be somewhat later, which is going to be recorded in Matthew chapter 20, that Jesus gives what he does not give in Matthew 16, and that is the manner of his death. he's going to be crucified. Matthew chapter 20, verses 18 and 19. Behold, we are going up to Jerusalem. The Son of Man will be delivered to the chief priest and scribes, and they will condemn him to death. And will hand him over to the Gentiles to mock and to scourge and crucify him, and on the third day he will be raised up. Crucifixion. I'm going to turn my back on you for just 1 minute. I want to make sure what's up there. The cross. There's only one cross there, and that is the cross that belongs to the speaker that we've just been quoting. It belonged to Jesus. Now, I'm not exactly sure how long after Caesarea Philippi the cross will occur, but it's not very long. In fact, you'll be surprised to see that in the Gospels, a great deal of the attention of the writers is focused on the last month of the life of Jesus, especially the last week. And so when Matthew records, as well as Mark, Luke, and John, the events of this particular time, it must be a very important time because of the attention these writers give it. The word cross, and that comes from the idea of crucifixion. If you ever have great pain, you might say, oh, this is excruciating. Well, that's a word that's associated with this idea of crucifixion. It had to do with a stake, tree, or a post. And there are many forms that a cross could take. The most traditional form is the kind that you see up on the screen. But there are other forms, and I do not know. The Bible does not give us exactly what this cross looked like. But it generally involves an upright, and it involves a cross member, which is called the patibulum. And this was a method of capital punishment. It is not a pleasant way to die. It is excruciating. You don't die quickly. It may take days for a person to die who is on the cross. And the reason is because there is no vital organ that is affected. And so when Jesus speaks about crucifixion, this must have come as a surprise to the apostles. This is not the way that Jews execute criminals. They execute criminals generally by stoning. But you'll notice that Jesus says will be delivered into the hands of the Gentiles. This is a completely new observation. Gentiles? Gentiles are not people who normally resided in Jerusalem. So it's rather surprising that Jesus would even mention this. As the story progresses, there's going to be kind of an intimate time that Jesus will spend with his apostles. He's going to observe the feast of the Passover with them, and when that is concluded, he's going to cross the Kidron Valley and go up to the Mount of Olives. The Mount of Olives is not really a mountain, it's more like a ridge, and it's called the Mount of Olives because there are olive groves planted on that ridge. He is accustomed to going there. Judas knows exactly where he will be. And so, while Jesus and his disciples, minus Judas, go across the Kidron Valley, he's going to take three of his men, Peter, James, and John. He's going to leave the other seven, and he's going to go a little distance, maybe about a stone's throw, and he will pray. He leaves the three and goes a little further and prays and comes back, and they are asleep. Now, you have to remember, this is at night. This is not during the daytime. This may be even after midnight, and they are asleep. Not surprising. Jesus says, "Wake up. Can you not watch with me for 1 hour?" And then he goes back and he prays. He returns from that prayer and finds these men sleeping again. He tells them to awaken, and they do. Watch that you fall not into temptation. And he goes away and prays again, and perhaps it's at this time that his prayer is so intense that it is as though great drops of blood fell from his brow. He comes back and the men are asleep. And he says, "The time is at hand. Get up. Let us be going." And he goes to the place where the other seven are, and Judas knows where that place is, and Judas comes with a great band of men, some of the military men. They're carrying torches. And Judas comes and he plants a kiss on Jesus. This is the man. Jesus is arrested. Now, I say arrested, maybe that's too polite a term. He's taken into custody after a short fight in which Peter cuts off the servant of the high priest's ear, and Jesus restores that. And they take this man. They take this man who perhaps is 35 years old, and they take him to an official's house. It is the house of the ex-high priest. His name is Annas. It is Annas. And he is the father-in-law of the present high priest. And Jesus is interrogated there. They're trying to find some kind of a charge that will merit the death penalty. Remember, Jesus had said, "I'm going to be crucified." So the Jews cannot put this man to death. They're going to have to find another way. They're not successful. And so Jesus will be taken now to the high priest's house. He will again be interrogated. And there is testimony given about what Jesus did or did not do, but none of the witnesses agreed with each other. And so they finally have to decide upon what shall we charge this man with. And the best they can come up with, he claims to be a king. And so they take this man bound to a place that is called the Praetorium. Now, that is not a Jewish word. It is a place that is generally occupied when the governor of that province is in the city of Jerusalem, which he happens to be at this time because it's the Passover, that he is going to be in the Praetorium, and they're going to cause a big scene. This is early in the morning, way before I'm accustomed to getting up. They bring this man before Pontius Pilate. And Pilate examines this man, and he finally determines that there really is not anything that I can charge this man with. "Are you sure you want to go through with this?" "Oh, yes, we are." Eventually, Pilate is going to send Jesus to another jurisdiction. It just so happens that Herod Agrippa is there. And he is going to send Jesus to Herod because he found out that actually Jesus is from a different province. He's from Galilee. And even though, obviously, Pontius Pilate has authority over that, here's a good way to sort of shift the responsibility to somebody else. Well, Herod is just really anxious to see Jesus, but Jesus doesn't even talk to him. Herod is going to have this man scourged. Do you know what a scourging is? It is very unpleasant. A scourge is a whip usually made out of leather thongs that would have either lead or some kind of metal on the ends of it or pieces of glass. And you use this to whip a person with, usually on his back. Now, sometimes the whipping can be so severe that the person dies through loss of blood. So they have Jesus scourged, and they mock him. They put on a scarlet or a crimson robe on Jesus. They have a crown of thorns put on their head, and they say, "Hail, King of the Jews!" They beat him on his head with reeds. Remember the thorn on his head? Well, just imagine those thorns piercing the flesh of Jesus having been scourged. Then they take off that scarlet robe and they return Jesus to Pilate. Pilate has already gotten information from his wife, this man is an innocent man. You need to be very careful. But there's really not much he can do unless he has the backbone to stand up against this injustice. And so again, he will inquire about Jesus. Are you a king? Well, it's to this end I have been born. Yes. And I've come to bear witness to the truth. Truth? What is truth? Pilate did not expect to find truth. In fact, he doubts it even exists. And so Jesus will bring this man back out to the crowd. I don't find any fault in this man. I have a habit, I have a custom that on this particular holiday, I release a prisoner to you. Whom should I release to you? Barabbas, who was a murderer, or this man Jesus? Surprisingly, the people said, release to us Barabbas. What shall I do with your king? We have no king but Caesar. Crucify. And so Pilate gets a bowl of water and he washes his hands, symbolically saying, I don't bear any responsibility in this. So you have him crucified. Well, it just so happened that the Jews could not crucify legally, and so there will be Roman soldiers who are going to do this deed. Now, I think that when Jesus is crucified, he's going to carry his cross to the place of crucifixion. It is not the whole cross. It's probably the patibulum, the cross member. But he cannot carry it very far. He stumbles. And remember, he had been scourged. He's weakened by the loss of blood. And yes, he's a human being, and so the loss of blood has an effect upon his physical stamina. And so they find a man, Simon of Cyrene, whom we heard about this morning in the reading, that he's going to carry the cross of Jesus out to the place of crucifixion. Now, they're not going to crucify Jesus within the city. They will crucify him outside of the city walls, and they take him to a place that is called Golgotha. Now, in other places in the New Testament, this place is called Calvary. And don't be confused by that. Calvary is a Latin word, which means the same thing as this idea of Golgotha, and that is the place of the skull. It's the place where they put people to death. The cross is laid out on the ground. Jesus is secured to the cross. He has nails driven through his hands, nails driven through his feet. And then the cross is raised up and it falls down into the hole that has been placed there for receiving the cross. Can you imagine the strain of the jar when that cross hits the bottom of the hole upon his hands and his feet? Crucifixion is inhumane. And Jesus now hangs there. He's waiting death. But Jesus is not alone. There are two other men who were crucified with him. And these two men are criminals. They crucified him, and the criminals, one on the right and the other on the left. Now, the men that you see in those scarlet robes, they're not priests, they are Roman soldiers. They're the ones who are carrying out this crucifixion. I guess maybe the Jews felt that not only were they not allowed to do this lawfully, but we'd rather let someone else do it. And so there are three men now hanging on a cross. It is before noon. But about noon, a very unusual occurrence occurs. Now, this is a public place. There are people coming and going. You've ever read stories about the Old West? Hangings were big business in the Old West. Hangings drew a large crowd of people who would watch people actually being hung by their neck until dead. It was no different in Palestine. People were going by to and fro. Some of them spit on Jesus. Some of them railed at him. And some of them said, if you are the Son of God, come down from that cross, save yourself. And these two men, one on each side of Jesus, said the same thing. Save yourself and us. And then it grew dark. There was darkness over the whole land from the sixth to the ninth hour. That's from noon to about 3 o'clock. Darkness. Nobody could see anything. You can't turn on the lights. There's no electricity there. And you can just imagine what it was like in the dark. Now, something is going on in the temple. The veil is being split top to bottom. I don't suppose there were people, many of them, I don't suppose were in there to watch that actually happen. There's an earthquake. And there were dead people who arose from the dead. They were resurrected. Two men, two criminals. I think these two men typify us. Now, you may be offended to think that you're calling us criminals. No, I'm not. I'm simply saying that basically humanity is divided up into two classes of people, saved and unsaved. And these two men initially are unsaved people. Because each of them is ridiculing Jesus, and they are saying, we know that you've claimed to be the Son of God, but if you are, then come down from that cross and save us and yourself. Jesus does not move. He doesn't come down from the cross. You may think, well, the nails will not allow that. No, no. If Jesus were determined to come down from the cross, the nails would be no hindrance. The nails did not keep him there. But love did keep him there. Love for the Father to do his will. And love for all of those for whom he is dying. So Jesus basically remains silent for a long time. Now he will speak, but later. Sometime during this period of darkness, one of these criminals, I do not know which one, whether it's on the right or the left, has a change of heart. When his fellow criminal speaks about Jesus, if you're God, save us and yourself. His fellow criminal said, well, we are dying because we deserve it. Because we've committed acts that are worthy of death. This man has done nothing wrong. And he says to Jesus, Lord, remember me when you come in your kingdom. Today, you will be with me in paradise. And then Jesus dies. Now, he's going to say seven things, and I suspect that you're aware of those seven words that come from the cross. The last of them being, Father, into your hands I commend my spirit. And he gave up the spirit and died. But the other two men are not dead. In the meantime, there is a report that comes back to Pilate that, you know, we don't want these men to hang on the cross over the Sabbath day, and so we would like to have their legs broken. Have you ever had a broken leg? Did you die from it? I've had a broken leg, and I'm still alive. A broken leg usually is not fatal. But it would be in the case of those men hanging on the cross. Remember the outstretched arms? How do you breathe? It's easy sitting in the pew, isn't it? But just think about the fatigue that's involved in being suspended by your arms, by nails in your feet, and you begin to droop. you can't breathe. So you have to push yourself up to breathe. But if you have a broken leg, you can't do that. And so these two men have their legs broken. I assume that they die rather quickly after that of suffocation. Jesus is already dead. And there is a soldier who comes around checking to see if everybody's dead. And they thrust a javelin in the side of Jesus. And there comes out both blood and water. And that is a sure medical sign that Jesus has expired. He's truly dead. Now think about these two criminals. The one criminal died in rebellion to God. And when he died, he stepped off into the unknown, condemned. On the other hand, this criminal who had a change of heart and repented, this man enjoyed the benefits of what Jesus can provide. And that's basically the condition of our world today. Those who are saved, those who are lost. Now, I must exclude children from this because children, I believe, are safe. They're neither saved nor lost, but they are not sinners. But the rest of us are. And so this man whom Jesus said, "Today you will be with me in paradise," enjoyed the benefits of what Jesus can provide. You see those crosses? That's the way that our Savior died. He died an ignominious death of a common criminal. Could he have saved himself? Oh, he could have called 10 legions of angels if he desired. But he didn't. He suffered death for you, and he suffered death for me. But now, if you paid attention to the first slide, there were four crosses. Your cross. My cross. It is interesting that even before Jesus ever said anything about being put to death, he had made this statement. Whoever does not bear his own cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. Why would you want to follow somebody if it's going to be that tough? Bearing a cross, and that's not literal, by the way, Jesus did not say that you must get a piece of wood and strap it upon your back and walk around with a cross. But a cross is a symbol of something. It is a symbol of death. It is a symbol of suffering. You will suffer. There's just no way to get around that. Christians will suffer. Now, suffering certainly is not going to be upon a tree with spikes driven through your hands. But Jesus used the word, "Bear your own cross and follow me," for a reason. And he had not even told his disciples that he was going to be crucified yet. But early in his work, he says there is a cross that must be borne. And that cross is not something that can be padded and made comfortable. And I suspect that if many people knew that becoming a disciple of Jesus may involve some hardship, they would maybe have second thoughts. I think that's why Jesus told his audiences early on, if you are going to be my disciple, it will involve hardship. Now, maybe not the hardship of living in first century Palestine, but boys and girls, young men and women, mothers and dads, there's a cross for you. In fact, Paul is going to say, "I have been crucified with Christ." Why did he choose that word, crucified? "I have been crucified with Christ, and it is not I that live, but Christ lives in me." Would you want to trade places with Paul? Not me. I don't want to be stoned. I don't want to be shipwrecked. I don't want to be beaten up by thieves. I don't want to be called bad names. But I may be. I don't know. I have been crucified with Christ. No longer it is I who live, but Christ lives in me. And the life I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and who gave himself up for me. But may it never be, Paul writes, Galatians 6, verse 14, that I would boast except in the cross of our Lord, through which the world has been crucified to me and I to the world. Now, there's a song in your songbook that expresses these sentiments. Yes. No, there's a cross for everyone. And there's a cross for me. You ever sung that song? Well, I suspect you have, especially if you're over 30 years old, you've probably sung that song. Yes, there is a cross for me. You know, sometimes we sing songs that have a pretty melody or a nice harmony, and the words are almost secondary, but the words ought to be primary, and I need to understand when I sing something like this, I really mean it. Yes, there is a cross for me. Are you willing to bear that cross? The Lord said that if you're going to come after me, you're going to have to bear that cross. You willing to do that? Well, now that cross may be something involving your family. You may have to kind of ignore what your family says and decide to listen to the Lord instead. Sometimes our greatest problems come from our own families. You may have to ignore your workmates who like to do things that Christians just cannot and do not do. You may have to go against your culture, which says, oh, we need to learn to tolerate everybody. Just ask this man who was the criminal, who refused to repent, was it worth it? What do you think he'll say? Bearing your cross. Four crosses. The cross of Jesus, the cross of two criminals, one impenitent and the other penitent, and my cross. Will you bear the cross today? If you've not been baptized for the forgiveness of sins, maybe that's a cross. Maybe you just have been taught all of your life. Baptism is a work, and we know that we're not saved by works. We're saved by grace. Well, God's graciousness extends to baptism. Being immersed in water so that your sins can be forgiven. Would you do that this morning? Or it may be that you've laid your cross aside. Maybe today you need to take it up and to truly bear the cross. If you're willing to come this morning, the invitation is open while we stand and sing together.